The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello and welcome to Circling the Bases, proudly presented by RotoWorld and NBC Sports. My name is DJ Short, and I'm back here once again with Eric Samulski. And also joining us here is our old friend Scott Pianowski, who has been a part of the show for most of this season, more recently focusing a bit more on your Yahoo duties with football season ramping up. It's understandable. But Scott, it's great to have you back here once again. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking some baseball. Looking forward to talking some 2024 baseball.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, with what happened with Aaron Rodgers yesterday. I was thinking this morning, like, what are the most tortured fan combinations? And myself, I am a Mets/Washington football fan, and that has been rough, especially from an ownership situation. But now the Mets have new ownership. The Commanders have new ownership. So I'm willing to admit that the Mets-Jets combo might be the most depressing combination of sports fandom. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it might be. You know, in New York, you can't root for both teams. And usually it lines up Yankees, Giants, and Mets-Jets. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Mets went for it. They shoved all their chips all in. Max Scherzer, Met. Justin Verlander, Met. Of course, they were selling those guys off at the trade deadline. And they've even said that maybe they're not going to be big players in free agency in this offseason. I'll believe it when I see it because we know Cohen has money from here to the moon. But, you know, the thing – I know this is a baseball podcast, but the thing that hurt so much about the Rodgers injury was that opening days about hope, right? Opening days about any baseball team, any football team, any – you know, whatever sport you follow, you want to feel good on opening day. This is our year. We're going to get better. We're building to something. Yeah. And to have the air get sucked out of the building as quickly as it did with the Mets – as quickly as it did with the Jets here. And it comes back to, like, you know, the year Tom Brady got hurt right away or the year Vinny Testaverde got hurt in the opening game of the season. You just want to feel good about yourself for like 15 seconds. And it's just really frustrating when that doesn't happen. And again, tying this back to baseball, the Mets were on the short list of contenders. And now it's, you know, Justin Verlander Mets is going to be an immaculate grid answer that we try to remember down the street, you know, in the next few years, you know, because he was just there and then gone.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you know, in the moment, the like gut-wrenching playoff loss feels terrible and it feels like it hurt so much more because you're like, oh, we were close. We, you know, we had a shot. But sometimes I think when the rug gets pulled out from under you and all you have are the what ifs as a fan, it can be even worse, right? I mean, last year's Mets season, you could at least say they were one of the best teams in baseball for a long stretch of time. And they were a good team and they accomplished a lot and they just didn't get there. Now, if they had gone out this year and Scherzer got hurt, start number one, Verlander got hurt, start number one, and all of a sudden the season goes off the rails and you're left thinking, what if they had just been healthy? You know, that what if is kind of that cruel twist of fate that sometimes is hard to get over.
Interesting Mets news right now. Just within the past hour, it was reported by pretty much all the major scoops reporters, Jeff Pass and Andy Martino, on and on and on, that the Mets are hiring David Stearns as soon as the regular season concludes. They've reached an agreement there. Of course, Stearns has been with the Brewers since 2015, came over from the Astros, joined the front office there, was the president of baseball operations for seven seasons. It's no secret. that the Mets have had interest in David Stearns. They've been trying to hire president of baseball operations. Billy Epler has been the GM for the past 2 years. We'll see what the structure is moving forward. But even in an offseason where, yes, for now, Steve Cohen saying he's not going to spend big, kind of constructing this front office, is Buck Showalter going to be the manager next year? I'm sure, Stearns will want to make his imprint on the organization as well. So it's going to be an interesting offseason no matter what happens for the Mets here.
What a great move, right? I mean, this is, to me, I know Stearns doesn't have quite the resume to line up this comparison, but this is like if the Red Sox had gotten Billy Beane back in the early 2000s as they were linked to, and they talk about that. There's a little bit of a note to that in Moneyball at the end where they woo him at Fenway Park and they give him a gift basket and everything. But Stearns has done a lot. The Brewers aren't at the bottom of the barrel of payroll, but between Craig Counsell being a really good manager and Stearns doing an excellent job with some of his value picks, I feel like Milwaukee's outkicked what they look like on paper a lot of times on the field. And now Stearns gets to go to a team. Look, whatever, even if they take a step back financially for like a minute, the Mets are going to be one of the teams with money. They're going to be one of the teams in there swinging for free agents. If it's not this year, it will be soon enough. So it's just exciting to see Stearns go from a place where he didn't have all the resources and maybe didn't have all the support he wanted. And a lot's going on with Milwaukee. We don't know what the status of the park and even the long-term viability for that team in Milwaukee, which makes me sad to even say that. But I'm just excited that now you get Stearns in the luxury SUV where he has all the modern conveniences and everything. What can he do? So, all the Jets fans who are depressed right now, maybe the Mets are going to make you feel better. Assuming Zach Wilson isn't the most underappreciated right asset in the NFL, but the Mets are going to be back in the swing of things soon enough because you hire smart people who are still, I think Stearns is still on the escalator. I mean, this could be the guy who runs his team for the next 15, 20 years.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what they do with Epler and just how the structure works. But you'd like to think you're not bringing in Stearns to make him report to somebody else. So it'll be interesting to see how they play. And I'm with you guys. I don't buy their sitting out anything.
No, I don't think any other team believes that either, to be honest with you. So Scott, the reason we have you here is that you and I recently took part in an extremely early 2024 fantasy baseball mock draft with 13 other drafters from Tout Wars. So really smart minds, good players thinking about what the draft board might look like in 2024 as of today. We didn't go super deep. It was only six rounds, but still 15 players, six rounds, 90 players. That's a pretty good group. So we'll go through that in a minute. But before we do, now that the NFL season is in full swing, we've got you covered in addition to three episodes of the Roto-World Football Show per week. Check out the Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry and Bet the Edge every weekday. You can watch Happy Hour at noon and 4 p.m. on Peacock. It's also available on the NFL on NBC Sports YouTube page. And Bet the Edge drops every Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Get your day started with them on our NBC Sports YouTube page. Both shows are available as well wherever you listen to your podcast. So make it a part of your daily routine.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection. infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So let's get started with this draft. We each have access to the draft board. Number one, shocking. We'll start at the top here, Ronald Acuña Jr. Surprising nobody. It's funny, though, like recent years, there's been a debate about who should be number one. You could make a case for different players. Next year, everyone's going to be number one because Acuña is the cheat code of all cheat codes.
Yeah, I also think it, just to point out, sadly, I didn't get entered into this one. I responded to Todd, but there were so many people that wanted in. But Tout Wars is an OBP format. Yeah. So I assume this draft is also OBP, which could be interesting as we get to later in the first round, because as a player, I'd love to talk to you guys about. But just something to consider as you go through these names, that is a component of this league.
Sure. So Acuña number one, not a huge shock there. Looks like with the power surge he's been on recently, you know, 40-70 is going to happen, which is just mind-blowing. Julio Rodriguez with his – and we're going to post the link to the draft board in the podcast description and also on the description on the YouTube when the video is posted to YouTube. So you can follow along with us during the show. Julio Rodriguez, the strong second half that he's had, jumped up into the number two spot. Corbin Carroll went number three. I can't really debate that either. I think it'd be interesting, you know, with the run that Trey Turner's been on recently, he probably would have been a bit higher in this draft. This draft did take place about like a week and a half ago, so I think he would have probably been drafted higher, but it is what it is. So Corbin Carroll, number three. I went number four, and I took Bobby Witt Jr., which was an impulse play. Admittedly, Eric, if you remember, I did the pick yep. on the air. Oh, yeah. So I wasn't really thinking about it too much, but I still like the pick. September hasn't been great so far for Witt, but just ridiculous in July and August. And the expected numbers said he deserved better than what he showed in the early part of the season. The strikeouts were down. He was hitting the ball hard, just not getting the luck that he deserved. But you look at the back of the baseball card numbers, 28 home runs, 86 RBIs, 41 steals, 80 runs scored. His expected batting average is .291. So you think there's that batting upside as well. So five category dynamo. I'm just kind of checking boxes in the first round. I want to get coverage in as many categories as I can. I think Witt gives that to me.
Yeah, a lot of things to like about this pick. Young player. On the escalator, he's always had a pedigree. I mean, he's somebody who could be an MVP someday. The only thing you're not getting here, if it is an OBP exercise, he might get dinged a little bit there. And you don't have that lineup buoyancy with Kansas City. It's a lineup that generally goes 3 to 5 deep, but not necessarily 9 deep. But the bottom line is this. Bobby Witt's floor is probably top 15, top 20 player. His upside is he's on all the magazine covers the next season. That he has a Ronald Acuña type of season. That's in his range of outcomes. Maybe it might be a different shape. It may be more heavily slanted. We know what elite sprint speed he has. I mean, but Bobby Witt is already a great player, and he's, I would think the expectation is that we haven't seen his best season yet. So I love taking an escalator player who checks this many boxes, as you said, anywhere in the first round. He's the type of player, when you pick in the middle of the first round, you're hoping he slips to you. I think he's totally justifiable, really, anywhere from two onward. Acuña is going to go one everywhere. I think the argument starts, who do you take at two? I think you could take Witt at two. I think he's a perfectly reasonable pick at four.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned, you know, a player on the escalator taking a young player with this kind of upside anywhere in the top half, because I think to me that is what I'm thinking with the next pick, which Spencer Strider went fifth. before Kyle Tucker. And I'm curious what you guys think about that, because Tucker could very likely go 30-30 this year. He's pretty close. Mm-hmm. He's 26 years old. So athletically, he's still going to be in his prime next year. We know that Houston is going to very likely continue to have a strong lineup. I know all of the reasons why Spencer Strider is great, even though, you know, we could talk about ERA to death, like we're, you know, debating the Cy Young. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, a player, a 30-30 talent who's, you know, hitting 290 and is going to be good in OBP and could, you know, very well have 100 runs and 100 RBIs. Like, I lean Tucker in that sense.
Yeah, me too. I also just think position players are so much safer than pitchers. And the strikeout advantage that Strider gives you, yeah, I mean, you see that upside. Like, he's going to get close-ish to 300 strikeouts this year, probably not quite getting there. The thing that with Strider that's so frustrating, especially if you're in, like, a head-to-head league, but yeah, you're going to get the strikeouts, but, like, if he comes out there, because he's a two-pitch pitcher, and he has these starts where he oscillates between being dominant and getting hit extremely hard. And you don't really know which Strider you're going to get from start to start. It's just a little too early for me. First round, I tend to play it safer. And I don't think Strider is as safe as it might seem that he is.
Yeah, also a shout out to our friend Shelly, who's on the show a lot, who made the Strider pick. And I get that when you take somebody, if you take that ace, it's kind of like that hero RB build of fantasy football. A lot of times in fantasy baseball, you get your ace and then you pound away with the hitting, which he did with their next three picks. So I think it's a perfectly reasonable roster build.
For sure.
I would have preferred Tucker here. And also a guy who seemed a little bit over his skis for me. Let's see what you guys think. Jose Ramirez was the seventh pick in this draft. He just had a step backwards in his age 30 season. And, you know, I know from Sesame Street, the next year is his age 31 season. I don't like the Cleveland offense around him. I know third base is not the deepest position in fantasy, but I'm not playing the position scarcity card here. I just want the best numbers I can get. And to me, there's a lot of other guys who are much more interesting. Now, granted, Tucker went ahead of Ramirez. So, I mean, you can't, you know, that person couldn't have taken Tucker. I would never in a million years take Ramirez over Tucker now. Tucker's younger, hasn't had his best season yet. He's got more protection and buoyancy. It's not just protection like to throw him a strike. I want Kyle Tucker to come up with people on base. When he gets on base, I want people to drive him in. I feel better about the Houston lineup than I do about the Cleveland lineup. So Jose Ramirez is, to me, at this stage of his career, a better real-life player than fantasy player. And I really don't think he's a middle-of-the-first-round guy anymore. What do you say?
I agree with you. I mean, I think that, you know, when we were drafting this year, we didn't yet know what the stolen base landscape was going to be. So the fact that he could steal 25 bases and hit for power, and, you know, it felt like at a position without a lot of top end talent, we felt like, oh, that's a good value in the early part of the first round. I think realizing now that, like, the 25 stolen bases you're going to get from Ramirez are good. You're not mad at it, but it's not something where you're like, oh, I need to reach. And I agree with you. Like, I don't love playing the position scarcity card early on in the first round. Like, I could see it at some point in the early rounds in general, but, like, you know, he and Mookie Betts are the same age. I don't know that I'm taking Jose Ramirez over Mookie Betts. I know I'm going to get more stolen bases from Jose Ramirez, but that's probably it. I think Betts is better in the other four categories. When, you know, when DJ and I were doing this live, we were talking about whether you would actually take Aaron Judge at four, because you know when he's on the field, you're getting ridiculous output. Obviously not, again, 25 stolen bases, but you're getting better output in four other categories. I might take Judge over Ramirez. So, yeah, I'm with you on that, Scott.
When I was at number four and I took Witt, I was debating Judge. I was also thinking strongly about Fernando Tatis Jr. I was thinking about Mookie Betts. What I love about Betts going into next year is, yeah, he's not going to give you the speed that some of these other players do, but he qualifies at three different positions everywhere going into next year, which is huge to have for your roster and the flexibility you can have moving forward, depending on how the draft board plays out. So I actually love Mookie Betts a lot. He went eighth
right after Ramirez, and then Judge went nine and Tatis went 10. So all
and
those guys,
Scott, you took about Tatis, who was another player I was considering. What were you thinking with Tatis there? Do you feel like he fell, or did that seem about right to you?
I was disappointed I didn't have a slot where I could have gotten Mookie Betts or maybe Kyle Tucker. I even would have considered Judge there. So it wasn't necessarily a proactive pick for me, but I took, again, this is a 6-round exercise, 15 managers. I wanted to get as many home runs and stolen bases as I could get. And I still feel like Tatis, he's run bad a little bit with injuries, with suspension. I mean, this lineup that I think is absolutely loaded. He's still at a really good age pocket, qualify a couple positions perhaps. So it's just a matter of, I wanted to come out of this draft with a lot of home runs, a lot of stolen bases, and a lot of offenses. Again, you know, the fantasy football tie-in, you tie into fantasy football offenses, you think you score a lot of points. In baseball, I want to be tied to offenses going to score a lot of runs. My first pick was a Padre. I know, look, they lost all those one-run games this year. They're not going to make the playoffs, but this is still a really good team. They could easily win 95 games next year. They could easily be the highest scoring team in baseball. I took Marcus Semien in the second round. Texas scores a ton of runs. I wanted to get power, speed, and investment in good offenses and players probably still on the escalator. I can't say that necessarily about Semien, but Tatis, I think we all know, hasn't had his best season yet, so maybe it'll be next year.
Can I ask you guys, because it's relevant to that exact point about the San Diego Padres offense, what stands out to me is the next pick after Tatis, which is Juan Soto. And I kind of feel like maybe Soto is being drafted based on what we thought about him a couple of years ago. And again, this is why I brought up the OBP thing before, is because in an OBP format, Soto is obviously way more valuable than an average format. So maybe you would say, yes, Soto here in an OBP league and not in an average league. But if I'm in a batting average league, like, I'm getting single-digit stolen bases from Soto still. He's hitting 260 this year. He hit 242 last year. So maybe he's a 270 guy, no longer the, you know, 300, 350 hitter that he flashed before. You know, solid power and counting stats. But I just don't know that I'm taking a hitter with a mediocre batting average and single-digit stolen bases this high in the draft, even if his name is Juan Soto.
I want to get DJ's take on this, but I'll quickly say I would have taken Freddie Freeman over Juan Soto. Oh, just snap call.
I was literally about to say that. It's crazy that Freddie Freeman went 12th. Like, how many years in a row do we have to see Freddie Freeman be awesome and consistent?
When have you ever regretted Freddie Freeman? Never.
It's wild. Like, we talk so much about looking for that safety valve in the first round, someone you can count on. Maybe they're not always going to be the number one player, but someone at the end of the year, you know the stats are going to be there. That's Freeman. I think he's a no doubt should have been drafted a few picks earlier than that.
I look at the Soto thing like I look at a little bit like Corey Seager, right? What's the knock on Seager besides obviously the health issues that he seems to run into? It's you're not going to get stolen bases. Well, he has 2. Soto has 8. So, yeah, you get a 6 stolen base difference. But if you're not getting a lot of stolen bases with Soto, why is he that much better than Corey Seager when you know Seager is in as good, if not a better, offense? He's going to hit for way higher average if you're in – a batting average league, and, you know, arguably has more power. I mean, he has more power this year in a little bit, but I just think all those knocks we had on Seager, kind of the same thing for Soto, but also you have a little bit of a batting average knock for Soto.
Right. Exactly. We thought that Seager was going to benefit from the shift changes and just from like better luck in general. He's not like a 240, 250 hitter. That's just not who Corey Seager is. I think the shift has helped a little bit, but he's also just been, he's been amazing. And I like that lineup in Texas has a chance to get even better as we move forward here. Evan Carter has been a nice addition for them in recent days. So I know things right now with the Rangers, like, who knows, they might not even make the playoffs at this point, but I do still like that. I like, at least offensively, I like that team.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Other interesting thing here from the first round, Shohei Ohtani goes 14th, we're assuming, presumably just as a hitter next season. Do you think that's a little too low? Were people scared off by the possibility of Tommy John? Yes, he'll probably still hit next year, but will he enter next season with questions?
Yeah, I mean, I think if he gets Tommy John, which I think it's likely that he undergoes some sort of surgery in the offseason. I think he wants to pitch again. It's not going to be next year. But so then isn't that kind of like on the upside, that's the Bryce Harper timeline. And that Bryce Harper came back early and Bryce Harper looks really good now, but it took a while for that power to come back. That power was not there at the beginning. And for all, you know, the success that Harper's had this year, relatively speaking, he has 16 home runs. So if you're going to get Soto for maybe a month or two less than you would normally, and you're going to get less power out of Soto early in the season as he recovers, Ohtani, I'm like going back on the Soto thing. If you're going to get Ohtani, you know, on an injury shortened season with less power than you would normally, I don't know that I love it as a DH-only guy this early in the draft.
So rule of thumb Harper,
I don't want to talk myself into first-round picks. I feel like you have to talk yourself into Ohtani a little bit. He's obviously wonderful when he's healthy. He's not healthy right now, and there's a looming surgery, and there's just – I love that Eric brought up the Harper comp, which I think is something we have to consider. I'm not talking myself into a first-round pick, and it's going to be frustrating if Ohtani makes a great comeback and does Ohtani things, because you want to talk about all the FOMO. When you don't have Shohei Ohtani, it's no fun because he's plastered all over social media doing amazing things, but I'm not going to take him in the first round.
So yeah, the free agency situation, the looming questions about Tommy John surgery. Harper had the surgery, I just looked up the date, November 23rd last year after the Phillies World Series run. So I'm sure Ohtani will, like anybody, you try to avoid surgery, rest, rehab. He'll probably throw some bullpen, see how he feels, make a decision. Maybe it comes a little bit earlier than Harper's decision.
You mean because they're not making a World Series run? Is that
your shocking news, by the way? The Angels are not making the postseason. exactly. So maybe surgery's earlier, and I don't know if he's going to beat Harper back the way he did this year, but I think you're right. It took a little while for Harper to perform the way we're accustomed to seeing. So I agree, probably that's the right spot for him, but I don't even know if I would have drafted him personally.
What team is he going to be on? Dodgers?
I guess. I could see a scenario where the Angels keep him.
Really?
Yeah.
My gut still says Mets, but who knows?
I can't see. If I'm Ohtani, I just have to feel like the Angels situation is just impossible. They can't win there. They've tried everything and nothing has worked.
I think also the story that leaked that like they told him to get an MRI and then he said no and then he got hurt. Like there was all this stuff where like who knows where that story came out from, but it speaks to a little bit of a fracture there. I'm curious, you had mentioned Trey Turner, DJ, before. Turner was the second pick of the second round here. So what is that?
Yep.
Pick 17. Would you have taken Turner over Otani?
Yes, I would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also would have taken Turner over Seager, only because Seager's power this year is so far above his norms that I just have to regress that back to something else. He's missed time in several seasons, including this year. We know he's not going to run that much. I just think Trey Turner – sometimes we saw this last year with Simeon, right? Big free agent contract. Maybe he presses early to try to justify it, and then like the final 4.5 months, he was fantastic and was actually a really great draft, I think, deal this year. Maybe Turner just, you know, new team, big contract,
presses
a little bit, and he's – it's not just that he got it back. He's dominated. Once the light went on for Trey Turner, he's been a dominant player.
He looks like the World Baseball Classic Trey Turner.
I think he's back in the first round. I think this is the last time we see Trey Turner.
And I know
part of it's the cadence of when this draft happened and everything, but I'm going to – the bottom line, there are green light picks, there are yellow light picks, there are red light picks. I will give you the green light on Trey Turner for 24.
Sometimes I think we forget the personal side of it. Like, you know, obviously there's the new money, new contract, new team thing. But like, so the new team means moving to a new city, uprooting your family. Also, when your wife is pregnant, because we know he took time on a paternity leave when his wife gave birth at this time of the season. So there's a lot of change going on in this dude's personal life while he's trying to perform on the field in a big market that is not super friendly to you when you're not performing. Like, there are some things like that they just take time to adjust. And I think we sometimes talk about that stuff, but then lose sight of it when we're evaluating a player's season.
Very fair. So we're going to start bouncing around the board a little bit here. I wanted to just quickly go through the top 10 starting pitchers who were drafted. So Spencer Strider, as we said, number one. Gerrit Cole was the only other pitcher selected in the first round. Otani as well, but that's presumably just as a position player. Three, Luis Castillo. Four, Kevin Gausman. Five, Zach Gallen. Went one pick before me in the third round. And then I took Zach Wheeler, who I think is not getting enough play as an NL Cy Young Award candidate. Like, that race is going to be crazy, and it's still – a lot to be decided here in the next few weeks, but Wheeler, when healthy, is a workhorse. Strikeouts, control has been great. Corbin Burnes went number seven. I considered him there too. I did go with Wheeler. Framber Valdez, eight. Tyler Glasnow, nine. George Kirby, 10th selected pitcher off the board. Does that sound right to you? Anybody egregious who's not in that top 10?
I think you put Kirby a lot earlier than he went, actually. I think.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe I mixed that up.
Yeah, I think Woodruff
Webb 9, went Webb 10. Yeah.
Woodruff 9, Webb 10. Okay.
Yeah, because after Kirby said he couldn't handle more than 95 pitches, we knew the draft room had to react to that. I'll tell you what, I feel really good about Framber Valdez. Framber Valdez to me is going to be an auto pick anywhere in the third round. The ground balls, the control, he's not a dynamic strikeout guy, but any game he strikes out 10 guys is never a surprise. He's got the Astros infrastructure. I feel really good about that. I also thought it was fascinating that Joe Sheehan double-tapped pitching with Castillo and Gallen rounds two, rounds three. I would think he would just absolutely obliterate hitting for probably the next 7 or 8 rounds, 10 rounds if we kept doing this draft. That sounded interesting to me. I also like Gausman at the end of the second round.
Me too.
Toronto, all preseason, hey, can't wait about the changes, the park. It's going to be good for offense. No, it was good for pitching. The home runs are down. And Kevin Gausman is another guy. It took him a while. The Orioles, for a decent chunk of time, could not develop a starting pitcher. But Kevin Gausman figured it out in the National League, and now he's one of the, year over year, one of the Cy Young favorites. He won't win this year, but one of the Cy Young favorites. Somebody, I think he's really justifiable. If you get him in the late second round, early third round, you've done very well.
The Glasnow pick is tough for me, just because obviously, like, there's no questioning the talent. And if the dude ever threw 140, 150 innings in a season, he would be otherworldly. It's just so hard if that's your ace, your top pick. But I also get that, like, listen, if 9, 10 starting pitches are off the board, are there that many starters who are better than Glasnow, and you wanna go there? I also still continue to think that, you know, maybe it's because of injury, who knows, that Brandon Woodruff gets a little bit overlooked. Starting pitcher 10, so he's still, you know, one of the top 10 guys off the board. He's just been so good when healthy the last 2 years. And I think it's kind of like maybe not the same argument as the same upside as Glasnow, but it's the same argument where it's like if he's going to pitch, he's going to give you elite production.
What's the status of Corbin Burnes, who would have gone two rounds earlier if we drafted this time last year? He probably would have gone where Gerrit Cole went. Instead, he goes in the middle of the third round after a disappointing – it's been such a strange year, right? I mean, he just had a no-hit bid against the Yankees, but he's had several poor starts. He's just been good this year, not great. How are we appraising him into the new season?
Yeah, it was a tough call for me between Wheeler and Burnes because Wheeler's had the better season. He better control, you know, better strikeout rate. I mean, he doesn't give up hard contact. Like, Wheeler just felt safer to me in this moment. Burnes has been better over the past couple of months for sure. But even still, like, the walks are up over the past couple of months. Like, and the, you know, home ballpark isn't necessarily what you want. His future in Milwaukee is up in the air, so I just think Wheeler, again, I was like looking for safe with my ace, with my SP1. So I felt better about Wheeler. I don't know if that's crazy or not, but that's just the impulse that I had.
I think that's fair. I think Wheeler is a safer arm and we know we're going to get the innings there. I do think Burnes has been better in the second half. The strikeout rate has gone up. You know, the K minus walk rate is good, even though the walk rate has gone higher. It's more similar to the Burnes that we have seen in the past. And I think the Burnes that this version of Burnes, the second half version of Corbin Burnes, is still not giving you elite strikeouts, even though they're better, which means he's a solid starting pitcher one on your fantasy team, not a guy who you're like, oh, should I take Burnes over Cole and Strider, which was the conversation coming into this year. So I think maybe the star has lost a little luster, but I still really, if I come out of a draft and I, you know, get Burnes where he went here in like the back half of the third round, I still feel pretty good about that.
So before we move on here, just a quick word for our listeners and viewers. This Sunday night, AFC East rivals do battle in South Beach when Mac Jones, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots face Tua, Tyreek Hill, and the Dolphins. That should be a fun shootout there after what we saw this past Sunday. Coverage starts at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock. So with the time that we have remaining here, I want to throw a couple of names at you guys. And one, I was wondering what you thought. So Elly De La Cruz, we got to talk about him. He went 25th overall in the second round. Does that feel right? Upside, you know, through the moon, but flawed approach, we know. Does that make sense there for you, 25th overall?
It does. He reminds me a lot of Bobby Witt, where there's a lot of swing and miss or OBP issues in his game, but there's going to be category juice. Maybe Witt was a better batting average risk into this season, so that's why he'll go earlier than De La Cruz will go, who has not played particularly well for several weeks, but at some point, you just say, screw it. I mean, there's a downside to anybody. There's so much upside here. At some point, he's going to be a top five pick consensus in future seasons. I think we all see that coming. The Reds are a very fascinating team with so much young talent. I thought that slot felt about right to 210, which is what, about 25 overall, something like that.
I fully get the argument on the upside. So I understand people wanting to take him. I guess it depends on how you're building your roster. Like, that's a point in the draft where I may have gone with a pitcher if I didn't take a pitcher in the first round. Like, I maybe feel better about taking a Kevin Gausman and anchoring my rotation, because I think the range of outcomes with De La Cruz is so high. And I know people are going to say, oh, well, if you drafted Julio Rodriguez last year, you know, that hit. And, you know, there are just far more times where you're using a really early round pick on a rookie. And we really do still need to think of Elly De La Cruz as a rookie next year, even though he has the at-bats. I guess I'm curious how Elly De La Cruz goes 25 and Matt McClain goes, you know, in the fourth round, when McClain has outproduced Elly De La Cruz this year and hasn't shown, you know, the roller coaster variance. And I get that, you know, the argument is upside, but also, you know, Matt McClain could easily be a 20-20 guy next year, 25-25 guy with a much safer batting average. So I think it just depends on your risk tolerance. And it felt a little rich for my blood.
I also like the way Seth Trackman balanced out his roster, right? He takes L.A. De La Cruz in the second round, bookended by Kyle Tucker, super high floor. Randy Arozarena, he's almost like a boring vet at this point. And then Paul Goldschmidt, who's aging into his mid-30s very gracefully. Even Logan Gilbert, I think, is a high floor pick. So if you're, sometimes it's a case of if you're going to roll the dice and let your hair down with L.A. De La Cruz, maybe you balance him out with some really high floor picks that surround him.
And then he went Josh Lowe with the last one, which is another, you know, that's why I said it's all about how you build. It's about how you build your team.
So in the third round, I thought it was interesting to see Edwin Diaz was selected as the first closer off the board. Hasn't thrown a pitch this year. Might throw a pitch in September. We'll see. Too early? Seem right? I don't know. It felt a little like aggressive. But by this come next spring, we may say that's a slam dunk. I don't know.
Confirmation bias, but I feel like I went with second and third tier closers in most of my drafts this year, and I got lucky and landed on a lot of the right guys. I feel like that's always gettable, even in a 15-team league. If you have a year where your closers blow up, then you go into these drafts like, oh, I got to get safe closers. What's safe about Edwin Diaz? He didn't throw a pitch this year. I would never take him in the third round.
I think it's – I mean, the pick was made by Greg Jewett too, which is worth discussing since relievers are what he does.
Which is all the more reason why I wouldn't take Diaz if I were him, because I think Greg is going to find hidden gems in the bullpen. Yeah. He's so good at that. I would say, Greg, you don't need Diaz. You're going to beat us on the back end.
Yeah, and Greg's philosophy has been, and it's one that I've kind of found success with too, is like trying to get the one guy early to anchor the bullpen throw all those darts at the end. I get it. If you took Edwin Diaz at the end of the third round in drafts this year, it was a major steal. He was not lasting till the end of the third round in drafts like this. I think you saw for various reasons this year that, you know, closers are not fully, they have some risk, right? The Liam Hendricks thing, the Edwin Diaz thing, there's so many, you know, kind of like wrinkles or obstacles, but I don't mind it. I mean, I feel as good about getting Diaz at the end of the third round as I do getting Class A in the middle of the fourth. I mean, there's a lot of upside to Class A, but he's also blown a lot of saves, and, you know, who knows how long that stays. The velocity going up and down with him all the time is a concern.
So I took Josh Hader pretty much right after Class A came off the board. Devin Williams was the fourth closer, Jordan Romano, Alexis Diaz, Camilo Duvall, Joan Duran. That's kind of the elite tier of closers. We have to go in a minute, but I also want to ask you about how weird it is to see Mike Trout drafted in the fifth round. If he's healthy, he's money. But I mean, is that what it's about? Just he can't stay on the field.
I can't draft Trout anymore because I think it's all about downside. Plus, he doesn't run anymore too. Even the batting average isn't where it used to be. It's no fun. We say this all the time. It's no fun to play fantasy sports like an actuary. But the actuary tendencies of me won't draft Mike Trout this early. That's an easy pass for me.
Yeah, it's tough, but I agree with Scott there. I think, you know, if he were to really plummet, obviously you never want to say fully out, but I don't see anybody really letting Mike Trout go that far, and it's just hard to think that he's going to come back and be the player that he used to be. You know, in a lineup that may be terrible again next year. If Ohtani leaves, there's going to be nothing around him. And again, like Scott said, he doesn't run, so you're just hoping he hits 40 plus home runs and has a good batting average. And he has to stay healthy to do that.
So I might've reached with my last pick in the sixth round. I'm not sure, but I'm interested to get your take on where Francisco Alvarez sits at the catcher position. Adley Rutschman was the first catcher off the board. Then we had the usual suspects, JT Realmuto and Will Smith. So I think that's pretty safely our top three. Can Alvarez crack the top five in ADP among catchers going into drafts next year?
I thought it was a little bit early, but I like the fact you took Yuri Perez in the fifth, Francisco Alvarez in the sixth, a couple of young players. We talk about players on the escalator. Perez, you would think, would throw a lot more innings next year. I had an argument with a co-manager of mine because we missed a chance to keep Alvarez, and I said to him snarkily, because he was giving me guff about it all year, I said, oh, okay, congratulations. We missed out on the next Mike Zunino. But I think eventually Alvarez is going to hit for a decent average. To me, if you want to take him in a digit round, I think that's fine. I think you took him maybe a little bit early, but I like it as a talking point because, again, we have to ask
That's what it was.
It's a talking point, right? For sure. Well, my final two picks were boring guys, Blake Snell and Lane Thomas. And, you know, who, for all I know, Lane Thomas could be somebody we draft next year. We end up cutting because the season was totally pixie dust. Sometimes I think I'm a little bit more sympathetic for guys who come out of nowhere. And sometimes they turn into Mike Yastrzemski, and you wish you hadn't drafted them. But you took Perez and Alvarez. If nothing else, DJ, you'll have no problem marketing this team in the offseason.
I'm very intrigued by the catcher position next year because there's a lot of young guys who didn't get full seasons this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see what happens with Alvarez and Ohapi and Bo Naylor. And, you know, does Yiner Diaz get a full-time look? Like, there's a lot of guys like that which could, depending on their situation, could drastically change the way we look at the depth of the catcher position next year.
And also, yeah, Tout usually is a two-catcher league, so this mock was under the assumption we needed two fills a catcher, which would push up Alvarez a couple of rounds over a traditional one-catcher fill.
True. I'm an Alvarez fan. The strikeout rate isn't super high. The power is legit, quick bat. So I think he's a middle-of-the-order bat, 30-homer annual kind of player as we move forward here. So like I said, we're going to post the link to the draft in the description of the podcast, both in audio and video. So be sure to check it out. Some interesting stuff and takeaways from this draft for sure. A fun little experiment. Subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. You can actually find all your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. Do yourself a favor, check out the Road World Football Show. Like I said earlier, 3 days a week, get your fill, get your fantasy roster right coming out of week one here. Also, follow us on Twitter or X if you don't already. Eric is at SamskyNYC. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. I'm at DJ Short. Take care, everyone, and we will see you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cause support may be available.